politics, culture, chaos. It's time to make sense of it all. It's time to have a little fun. This is your afternoon dose of sanity. This is the Rich Zeoli Podcast.
Well, looks like Build Back Better is dead. It's over. Joe Manchin said it. Build Back Better is done. This is what the Democrats get for trying to savage the guy, for simply doing what his state wanted to do. But he said now it's over. The original bill is dead. And now I guess it'll be Build Back Better from beyond the grave. Good afternoon. Welcome to the podcast. Hope you're having a great day today. Some fun stuff going on. Manchin says no formal talks are going on now. No formal talks. Got that? No formal talks. So does that mean it's over? And did Trevor Noah defend the Canadian truck drivers, the host of The Daily Show? Also, too, or ABC, Good Morning America, covering for Whoopi and her comments about how the Holocaust was not a race issue. But let's begin today by focusing a little bit on what's happening in Virginia, where students there are being suspended for not wearing masks. This is, we talk about the, I guess, the rule of law all the time and what it means to have tyranny and what it means for certain governments to decide they're going to do whatever the hell they want to do. And they don't care. They're going to defy the chain of command, defy the rule of law. They don't care. I mean, to me, that's, what's a word for it, a good word for it? An insurrection? That's a good word for it. An insurrection. So even though the governor of Virginia, who was elected governor of Virginia, has said no mask mandates, several liberal school boards are defying him and doing it anyway. This is NBC News Washington's report on this.
Every morning last week, from Tuesday until Friday, Stephanie Lundquist Aurora escorted her three sons to school. Two attend this elementary, her oldest this middle school. None of the children wore masks, a violation of FCPS policy. She says it was their decision.
My sons feel that they should have the right now to not wear a mask, so I left it up to them.
Now, all three boys trying to keep up with their studies from home. That's because they've been suspended day after day. FCPS considers their refusal to wear a mask a violation of the dress code.
I think it's incredibly draconian. I think it's unbelievable. We pay for public education. We have the right to in-person education.
Lundquist Aurora has sent several emails to the superintendent appealing the suspensions. She says she and her sons believe Governor Glenn Youngkin's executive order allowing parents to decide about masks should now be guiding school policy. But FCPS and many Northern Virginia school districts are keeping the mandates in place.
There you go. They're doing it anyway. They want to do it anyway. They want to do it anyway, they say, and they don't care. So now they're going to punish students who don't wear masks, even though the governor has said we're not going to do a mask mandate. Isn't that something? Just completely defying the guy? It's like with these blue places, they only care about actually following the rules when it's rules that they like, and that's it. Otherwise, they don't care. Oh, it's truly amazing to me how this happens sometimes. What else can I tell you? So ABC did not discuss Whoopi's controversy. You know, Whoopi, who said the Holocaust was not about race. And so this morning, CBS morning show and also NBC's Today show, they did things about it. You know, they did their little stories about it, segments about it. Segments, that's the word, right? But not Good Morning America, which is part of ABC, which, of course, is home to the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos and also home to The View. So they ignored it. Here's a little bit of the morning show's reporting on Whoopi.
Under fire, Whoopi Goldberg facing criticism for this controversial comment about the Holocaust.
If you're going to do this, then let's be truthful about it, because the Holocaust isn't about race.
Her overnight apology amid the growing fallout.
Whoopi Goldberg eventually responded to the outcry and apologized, but a new TV appearance overnight raised more questions.
This morning, Whoopi Goldberg under pressure.
And I'm getting, you know, all of the mail from folks and the very real anger.
Trying to backtrack and apologize after making controversial comments Monday. The outcry was swift, with many pointing out the Nazis used racist propaganda during the Holocaust. The head of the American Defense League tweeting, "The Holocaust was about the Nazis' systematic annihilation of the Jewish people who they deemed to be an inferior race." Goldberg has a history of controversial moments, including defending Bill Cosby on The View, which she later retracted, now apologizing and saying she'll approach discussions around the Holocaust with more consideration.
The Holocaust isn't about race.
No.
No, it's just CBS.
It's not about race.
Others at the table, along with critics, pointed out that the Nazis, in fact, did see Jewish people as an inferior race. On The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, she appeared to stand by what she said. Listen to this.
I was saying, you can't call this racism. This was evil. Mm-hmm. This wasn't based on the skin.
Goldberg issued an apology on Twitter last night saying, quote, "I stand corrected. I'm sorry for the hurt that I have caused." Hitler, if you read his odious diatribe Mein Kampf, or if you even read the Nuremberg laws of Nazi Germany, saw Jews as an inferior race, and they set about to systematically wipe them out off the face of the earth, 6 million souls. And so
he called it an inferior race repeatedly.
He called it
clearly about race for him.
Repeatedly.
Right. Yes.
And it was clearly about race for him. It's just a damn shame that Whoopi is going to get to keep her job. And I'm not big on cancel culture. Don't misunderstand me. It's just that she'll get to keep her job because she's a good standing liberal. And that's what bothers me. I don't want people losing their job, especially when they are sincerely contrite and they admit that they said something stupid and they atone for it. I'm okay with that. But it's the double standard. That Ilya Shapiro, the professor at Georgetown, will probably lose his job, even though what Ilya Shapiro did was a dumb tweet that he since has said was stupid by saying that we might lose a good nominee to a lesser black woman is what he tweeted. And he realizes that he said what he said was inappropriate, apologized for it. His comment was there's a better judge, just not a black woman, if you were to compare the two side by side. And we might lose out on that because Biden has this point of having a black woman appointed to the Supreme Court. He admitted the wording was stupid, and he apologized for it, and yet there's a sit-in today at Georgetown to try to get him fired, and he may very well be fired. He's a libertarian. The man's not a racist. He's a defender of civil liberties and a huge proponent of incarceration reform, but he's on the right because libertarians are considered the right, Cato Institute and that sort of thing. And so he'll probably lose his job. Whoopi will not. And that's what I'm saying. It's a shame that that's how it works in this country, that there's this double standard. That if somebody on the right had said something as stupid and callous and horrific as what Whoopi had said about the Holocaust not being about race, they'd be out of a job. Because they would be, say, the fueling the anti-Semitism and blah, blah, blah. But with Whoopi, it's, well, she's sorry and she's learned from what she said and she'll do better next time. It's the double standard of, as long as you are a liberal and good standing, you're allowed to do certain things. Certain things you get to get away with. You get to get away with. And they'll make it better by having the head of the Anti-Defamation League on The View to basically now try to cover for the show. And that's what happened today. I'll play you a little snippet of that.
It's been a long time, and I love when we get to work together. Talking about mouse, according to a 2020 study by the Claims Conference, 63% of millennials and Gen Z surveyed did not know that 6 million Jews were killed during the Holocaust. And yesterday, our discussion, as you mentioned, was about how the McMinn County School Board in Tennessee is now denying students the right to study a book like Maus, a Pulitzer Prize-winning book on the Holocaust. How are we going to educate the next generation of young people when Holocaust education is being taken out of schools and is just under attack?
Well, I'm so glad you asked this question. Because it seems like school boards are war zones in this moment, with sides, with the left and the right fighting like you wouldn't believe, you know? And I get it. I think parents should be engaged. I think school boards should be engaged in what we teach our kids. But there should be some hard and fast principles, like the facts. And the Holocaust happened, and we need to learn from this genocide if we want to prevent future tragedies from happening, just like we need to learn about American history, etc. And the data, as you said, doesn't lie. The idea that in the UK, there was a recent study that reflected that a third of the people believe that you know, 6 million Jews weren't killed in the Holocaust. I mean, it's just 70 years ago. And so I do think we have found at the ADL that you can't stop hate by arresting people. You can't stop hate by litigating. You got to change hearts and minds. And Holocaust education has a proven impact in reducing levels of intolerance, in improving the way people see pluralism.
Now, Whoopi needs some Holocaust education, is what they're saying here. You realize this is Jonathan Greenblatt, the author of It Could Happen Here. What he's saying here is Whoopi needs this education. That's what Whoopi Goldberg needs, Holocaust education. All right.
So it is very important, this education. It's got to happen in the classroom. But I would dare say shows like yours are so important. And I know you guys believe in representation. And I know you guys work to bring all points of view. And hey, I know you're considering, you know, a new host for the show, a permanent host. Think about having a Jewish host on this show who can bring these issues of anti-Semitism, who can bring these issues of representation to The View every single day.
I guess I don't count because everybody thinks I'm Jewish, but I'm not. So maybe you're right. Well, you know, Jonathan, just to...
That's Joy Behar trying to be funny. Everybody thinks I'm Jewish, but I'm not, so I guess I don't count. No, I don't think you'd count because you're not Jewish. Right, exactly. So the book that they're talking about, this Holocaust book, it's pretty fascinating. It's called Mouse. Sales soar after the school board ban in Tennessee. It was banned by a Tennessee school board last week. Skyrocketed to the top of an Amazon bestseller list. More than $83,000 has also been raised so far to give free copies to students. Art Spiegelman's 30-year-old Pulitzer Prize-winning series was not even in Amazon's top 1,000 at the beginning of last week when news broke of McKinn County's ban over what it deemed unnecessary violence, nudity, and swearing in the novels. But by Monday, the complete collection was at the top of the online giant's bestsellers in literary graphic novels, with first and second books individually rounding up the top three. The series almost shared the same sweep in Amazon's overall bestsellers list with the collection in second place, Mouse 1 in third, and Mouse 2 in ninth. The demand for it is so great that Amazon warned the copies would not be available until the end of February. Only Peter Schweitzer's powerful book, Red Handed, China's Influence in American Politics, which was recently previewed by the New York Post, prevented Mouse from being a clean sweep at the top. At the same time, as online sales of Mouse are skyrocketing, a store in McMinn County's neighboring Knoxville, Tennessee, has started an online fundraiser to buy copies for U.S. students, raising more than $83,000 by Monday, more than four times its goal of $20,000. He said, Art Spiegelman's masterpiece is one of the most important, impactful, and influential graphic novels of all time. We believe it is a must-read for everyone, wrote fundraising sponsor Nirvana Comics Knoxville. Spiegelman won a 1992 Pulitzer for the books about his father's experiences as a Holocaust survivor, and he suggested that history forewarned the response. The school board could have checked with their book-banning predecessor, Vladimir Putin, said the 73-year-old author, told CNBC of the Russian dictator. He made the Russian edition of Mouse illegal in 2015, and the small publisher sold out immediately and has had to reprint repeatedly, he said. The Streisand effort struck again, he said, referring to the censorship backfiring. Now, that term refers to Barbara Streisand's 2003 attempt to ban photos of her house that instead led to tens of thousands of people viewing them for the first time. Spiegelman said he hopes to coordinate a public Zoom event for the McMinn area where I will take questions and answer questions. And other stores have been offering this book out there all across the country right now. Now, remember something, too. This book, which portrays mouse, the mice as Jewish people and cats as the Nazis, it's obviously adult-oriented to the extent that the Holocaust is adult theme, but we want to teach people about the realities of the Holocaust. What the school board said was, we do not diminish the value of Mouse as an impactful and meaningful piece of literature, nor do we dispute the importance of teaching the children the historical and moral lessons and realities of the Holocaust. To the contrary, we have asked our administrators to find other works that accomplish the same educational goals in a more age-appropriate fashion. We said we do not believe that this work is an appropriate text for our students to study. Remember something, and this is the point that I think happens all the time, and it's the same point that happened with Joe Rogan, and it's what I said this morning on the show. Whenever you ban something, people want to get their hands on it. Bans don't work. Book bans don't work. People want to get their hands on it. That's what happened. That's just the reality of what happens. You raise attention about something, and then they want to hear it. It's like, well, what is this, all this controversy about Joe Rogan about? Well, he has this quote-unquote controversial doctor. First of all, controversial is not a pejorative, just so you know that. I hope I'm controversial. If I seek being controversial, then I probably need a new job. But controversial, and they say, well, then, well, I want to hear it. I want to hear what's so controversial. Let me hear what's controversial. I want to hear it. And that's what happens. And it happens that way because people don't like to be told they can't read something. You know why? Because we've been told by other books that they've attempted to ban, like Fahrenheit 451 or 1984, that we need to decide for ourselves. And that book bans and those things are a bad, bad, bad idea. And you know what? They are.
Let's cut through the BS. This is the Rich Zeoli Podcast.
Now, knowing what I just said about censorship, you think the White House would wise up to that fact, and the left would, and the media would back off Joe Rogan, too. But they won't, and they're just going to continue to drive people to listen to Joe Rogan. But realize something, too, and that is that they want, and they love, and they believe in censorship. It is what they believe in. It's a very important part of who they are. And the reason for that is because you should not be allowed to say things that go against conventional wisdom. It's the collective, and they'll decide what's best, the consensus. And the consensus is driven by often money and politics in life. You know that. You're a smart person. You figured that out a long time ago. But they think we're stupid, and they think that it's always in our best interest, whatever information they give us. And that's not the truth. That's not always the case. Sometimes they give us some very bad information because it's driven by money and politics. So we have a healthy skepticism, and what we want is we want to decide for ourselves. It's why we seek out different sources of information. I hope it's one of the reasons why you seek out my podcast or my show or both. But the White House doesn't learn that lesson. The left doesn't learn that lesson because they think they're smarter than you. You know, one common theme I've found with many on the left is that they think they're the smartest people in the room. And I find it frustrating. I'm not saying all people on the left. I'm not saying that. I've just found in my experience, a lot of people on the left think that they are the smartest person in the room. And so if you disagree with them on something, like let's say you 2 months ago said cloth masks don't work, they would think you're an idiot. They would because you're defying science. Now everybody knows. Once the consensus agreed with what everybody already knew, which is that, masks don't work. You see what I mean? But this is what happens, whether it's monoclonal antibodies or the origins of the virus or the fact that cloth masks don't work or even these surgical masks don't work or masks on kids and the harm and everything like this. Initially, it was that you're stupid, you don't see it the way we do, and therefore we need to shut down anyone who says anything other than what we approve of. And that's how they view things. And Snarks is back at it again today. They want more censorship. The White House, they're not interested in protecting speech in this country. They're interested in shutting down speech that disagrees with their positions. That's the bottom line.
Last week, the Surgeon General also was asked on MSNBC about Joe Rogan's vaccine comments on Spotify, and he said that tech companies have an important role to play in stopping misinformation because they are the predominant places where misinformation spreads. Spotify is putting out advisory warnings on episodes that have to do with COVID-19. Does the White House and the administration think this is a satisfactory step, or do you think that companies like Spotify should go further than just, you know, putting a label on there to say, hey, go do your own, you know, check this out. You know, there's more research you can look at, you know, scientific research regarding COVID.
Sure. Well, last July, you probably know, but the Surgeon General also took the unprecedented step to issue an advisory on the risk of misinformation in public health, which is a very significant step. And amid that, he talked about the role social media platforms have. So our hope is that all major tech platforms and all major news sources, for that matter, be responsible and be vigilant to ensure the American people have access to accurate information on something as significant as COVID-19. That certainly includes Spotify. So this disclaimer
Spotify is
a positive step, but we want every platform to continue doing more to call out mis and disinformation while also uplifting accurate information. I mean, look at the facts, right?
Yeah, look at the facts, right? We want them to do more. We decide what the facts are, and anybody who goes out of that lane, we want them shut down. Get it? Because we decide what's facts and what's not facts at Spotify. By the way, fact is it's not called Spotify. Just for the record, I'm just saying for the record, it's not called Spotify. I hate to be nitpicky about stuff like that. It's just my nature. I can't help it. Asked to clarify today when the Catholic president Joe Biden believes life begins. Snark said this.
The president has said in the past he does not believe that life begins at conception. When does he believe it begins?
You know the president's position? He believes in a woman's right to choose. And he's spoken to this in the past. So, and I know you ask this every time you come in here, which is, you're absolute right, but I don't think I have anything new to reveal for you.
The question is, when does he believe life begins? And it's central to the debate over the question of a baby's viability. And pro-life Americans, don't you agree, should know where the president stands in his thinking, and this is a fundamental question.
The president believes in a woman's right to choose. Go ahead.
Hi, go ahead. The president believes in a woman's right to shoot. Move on, even though it's one of the most consequential issues facing America today. That's all he's going to say about it. Let's go, next question. Jen Psaki has not said whether or not Biden will or will not pack the Supreme Court. Again, I think it really depends on what happens with the ruling on abortion, actually, and whether or not they get their way. If they get their way and the decision stands affirming Casey or whatever the earlier precedent is, then they'll be okay with it. If it overrules Roe or Casey, well, then what they'll do is they'll try to pack the court, because ultimately at the end of the day they want to pack the court. That is their ultimate objective here. And Biden's flip-flopped on this issue a bunch of times, as you can imagine. Right now we have 9 justices. The court packing idea would go to 15 justices. It would be a super majority court. It would act like a gigantic, basically mini legislature. I know that that's a little bit of an oxymoron, a giant mini legislature, but it would be essentially that. It's like giant shrimp.
Does the president plan to decide what he's going to do on Supreme Court reform before he makes this nomination?
He is reviewing the Supreme Court Commission report. I don't have a prediction of when he will conclude his analysis of that.
And I just asked because the report includes suggestions about things like changing the number of people on the court, and you would think he would want to know who, if he's going to increase the size of the court, who he's going to put on first, right?
I think, Trevor, his focus right now is on going through a process that takes it, that values the seriousness of the role he has as president, that where he consults, as you saw today, with Democrats and Republicans, and to select and nominate an eminently qualified black woman to serve on the court. That's his focus right now.
That's what he cares about. And then if he gets more, 6 or 7 more, then that's fine too. But right now we're focused on this one. But we're certainly not going to rule out court packing, because it's very important to the left to make sure that we get our way every single time. That's the translation right there, just out of curiosity. In case you're just wondering how to translate Psaki speak. Now, Psaki speak can go in a lot of different ways, by the way. Jen Psaki lists the many ways that Joe Biden has actually fueled the most illegal immigration in the last 20 years.
He obviously proposed an immigration bill on his first day in office. And beyond that, he has taken steps to protect DACA recipients, ended the Muslim ban and the public charge rule, put together the Family Reunification Task Force, restarted the Central American Minors Program that the previous administration ended, extended or newly designated temporary protected status for a number of countries, and worked with DHS to give clear guidance for internal enforcement.
Ah, yes. Internal enforcement. Don't you love internal enforcement? I do. It's always fun, right? Internal enforcement. Joe Biden wanted to go a different way when it came to immigration. How's that working out for everybody, too? Is that working out well? Because the border's just, you know, closed and nice and tidy and everything like that?
We have also been very clear about our view on the MPP program and very clear on our view about the inhumanity of the prior administration and how they handled immigration, and that we had every intention of implementing a different approach.
A different approach, get it? And that different approach is now called open borders. That's the different approach. Just in case you're wondering what that means, it means open borders. Got it? Biden took some questions today at the White House in the Oval Office. He had a little bit of a chit-chat there. Let's hear some of the answers to the questions that the president was asked today. Now, is that not the most painful noise you've ever heard in your life? It reminds me of that scene in Dumb and Dumber when he goes, "You want to hear the most annoying sound ever?" Jim Carrey. That's what that sounds like to me. The most annoying sound in the world. And I know you're mad at me now because I played that for you, and I'm sorry, but you know that's the White House of in the White House. It's the Oval Office in the White House in Washington D.C. And that's what happens because the president won't take questions from the press. No, I've been in that White House before. I've been in that Oval Office before. Not with this president, but with the previous president. And that president took questions all the time. even though he was going to destroy the First Amendment and put journalists in their journalistic internment camp, he still managed to take questions constantly. Like, to the point where the White House often said, maybe we should try to keep the breath away from him. But this president's, thank you, thank you, thank you. Hi, I'd like a job at the White House in the communication shop. Sure, what would you like? Well, I'd like to be the person that just yells thank you as they usher the media out of the room. Oh, well, it's lucky for you, we're hiring. We could use somebody to yell thank you as loud as possible, please. And if you could, extra obnoxious. If you could be extra obnoxious for us, that would be huge. Can you do that for us? That'd be huge. All right? Right now, the journalists are now having to admit, and they don't want to admit this now, that Biden's job approval rating stinks. It stinks so bad. They can't help but figure this out, that just Biden is just so unpopular. They hate to admit it, but they have to admit it now. There's no hiding it. They can't possibly now try to hide it. They can do their best, but they can't. Let me go back to Whoopi again for a second. Whoopi, basically now, let me share a little bit about this with you. This is from our friend Nicholas Fundacaro over at Newsbusters. And he writes, proving that there's a double standard when it comes to who politically gets to have their career survive and life's work preserved after making controversial comments, Whoopi Goldberg will be able to survive. Jonathan Greenblatt of the ACL, the Anti-Defamation League, was on the show, obviously. Whoopi began the show by suggesting today she misspoke, and while she tweeted out last night, she said, I want you to hear it directly from me. All right? This is what she said today.
So yesterday on our show, I misspoke, and I tweeted about it last night, but I kind of want you to hear it from me directly. I said something that I feel a responsibility for not leaving unexamined because my words upset so many people, which was never my intention. And I understand why now. And for that, I am deeply, deeply grateful because the information I got was really helpful and helped me understand some different things. And while discussing how a Tennessee school board unanimously voted to remove a graphic novel about the Holocaust, I said that the Holocaust wasn't about race, and it was instead about man's inhumanity to man. But it is indeed about race, because Hitler and the Nazis considered Jews to be an inferior race. Now, words matter, and mine are no exception. I regret my comments, as I said, and I stand corrected. I also stand with the Jewish people, as they know, and y'all know, because I've always done that. So because of all of this, we've asked Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, and author of It Could Happen Here, to help continue this very important conversation. Jonathan, thank you for being here. I know a lot of people were very upset by what I said yesterday and the things I regret. And so I want to clear this up. Can you explain why the Holocaust was about race?
Well, Whoopi, there's no question that the Holocaust was about race. That's how the Nazis saw it, as they perpetrated the systematic annihilation of the Jewish people across continents, across countries, with deliberate and ruthless cruelty. And literally, the first page of Maus, the book you were talking about yesterday, Whoopi, it opens with a quote from Hitler. And literally, it says, the Jews undoubtedly are a race, but they are not human. You see, Hitler's ideology, the Third Reich, was predicated on the idea that the Aryans, the Germans, were a, quote, master race, and the Jews were a subhuman race. It was a racialized anti-Semitism.
Now, you know and the reason why I'm playing this for you again, even though I talked about Whoopi earlier in the podcast, is because, well, first of all, they just published this clip, but secondly, it's that this is the way that they absolve Whoopi. See, she does the re-education camp right there on the show, and then, you know, all is forgiven because she's a good leftist in good standing. When you're a good leftist in good standing, they have to save you. That's why he's on the show today. It's to give her absolution. She's apologized. She's learned her lesson, and now everybody can move on. But remember, it's because she's a good liberal that this is even happening. If she wasn't a good liberal, this would not be happening right now. He would not be on the show. She would not be allowed to apologize. She would not even be on the show right now. That's the reality. That's the double standard, you understand. I know you understand that, obviously. And that's why I wanted to share that with you, because I think it's really important to understand that. Now, further in the segment, as Greenblatt was fielding questions from the panel, co-host Joy Behar, who's not Jewish, even though apparently she thinks the people think she is, tried to single out, that was her words, Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and suggest he wasn't doing enough to condemn anti-Semitism. She said, you know, Jonathan, just this weekend in Florida, neo-Nazis held a rally targeting Jews. It was quite deplorable to watch it. How should elected officials be confronting this behavior? What should DeSantis do about that particular thing, for example? Greenblatt, of course, took a nibble at the bait, but eventually said the right and the left need to call it anti-Semitism when they saw it on their side. We need the conservatives to call it out when it happens on the right, and we need progressives to call it out when it happens on the left. You know, like at college campuses, for example, when they consistently demonize the Jewish state, and they do that all the time on campuses, where they are so incredibly, the things they say about Israel and how they want Israel destroyed and everything else, it's awful. It is awful what they say. And by the way, Ron DeSantis has pushed back. First of all, he didn't march with the neo-Nazis. He wasn't out there with the neo-Nazis. What's amazing is that some people, why isn't he condemning it? What? What do you mean? Why isn't he condemning it? What is it? This is what they said. He said, so what I'm going to say to these people, these Democrats who are trying to use this as some type of political issue to try to smear me as if I had something to do with that, we're not playing their game. And this is a little bit more about what he said today. I'm going to share this with you if I can here. I can bring this up. Here we go. If I can get to the DeSantis part here. Hang on 1 second.
Made.
This is DeSantis, and he's going to talk about speed cameras here too, which I really appreciate his comments on.
That with all that money that they're throwing out, you know, they're spending like $15 billion on speed cameras. I mean, you're driving, they take a picture of your license plate, just send you a bill. I mean, I don't like that. It's adding more surveillance in our society. I don't know why you would want to go down that road. But they're putting all this stuff in there, and I'm just thinking to myself, could they not have pride? Just a heck, if they did a couple $100 million, but they could have done a chunk of that reservoir with what they're doing, and that would have been something that would have been very meaningful. But alas, we're here. They didn't do that. But we're going forward with our parts. We're going to have a great I think legislative session in terms of support for Everglades and our water resources, and we're going to continue to put the pedal on the metal in the state of Florida. Okay, thanks everybody. We'll take some questions from people.
I have a question. Can you respond to the Nazi demonstration in Orlando over the weekend? Why do you feel hate groups
So what I'm going to say is these people, these Democrats who are trying to use this as some type of political issue to try to smear me as if I had something to do with it, we're not playing their game. You know, some jackasses, you know, doing this on the street. First of all, state law enforcement is going to hold them accountable because they were doing stuff on the overpass. So they're absolutely going to do that. And they should do that. But I'm not going to have people try to smear me that belong to a political party that has elevated anti-Semites to the halls of Congress, like Ilhan Omar, that have played footsie with the BDS movement, that even have people in their party that have cavorted with Farrakhan. No, we're going to take our record in Florida and what we've done, sign the strongest anti-Semitism bill in the country. We've stared down companies who were indulged in BDS like Airbnb, and we've won. We've provided record funding for Jewish day schools, and we've had the strongest relationship between Florida and Israel than we ever had in terms of education, business, all these tremendous things that have happened since our state visit in 2019. And so they try to play games to try to politicize. Why would they do that? Why would they want to elevate a half dozen malcontents and try to make this an issue for political gain? Well, because they want to distract from the failure that we've seen with Biden. And they're all joined at the hip. All these policies, they all support in Florida 100%. The inflation that these policies have caused, that's absolutely killing people at the gas pump, in the grocery store, making everything we do in the economy more expensive. You look at the disaster on the southern border, people from like 100 different countries pouring into the country illegally, hundreds of thousands of people a month. They support those policies. Those are bad policies. You look at the crime throughout the country that's really spiraling out of control because of soft on crime policies. We're not going to let that happen in Florida, but that is something that they're tied at the hip with. You look internationally how our country's been humiliated, how these other problems are happening all because of the failure of leadership. And so that is what they're trying to avoid is being able to be held accountable for that. So we're not going to let them get away, you know, with these stupid things where they're trying to smear somebody unfairly. And I will not be smeared by them. And that's just the reality. And oh, by the way, Florida is probably, got it, maybe other than Israel, the number one destination for Orthodox Jews to move to, if you look over the last 2 years, because we do it right, because we have provided tremendous support, and that's just what we're going to continue to do in the state of Florida.
Governor, A-plus, by the way. That's an A-plus answer. A-plus.
Yesterday we reported four
bombs. A-plus way to handle that situation. Don't play their game. That's what it is. They are. Notice that Whoopi says something horrific about the Holocaust, and Ron DeSantis gets blamed? Because that's the little game they play. He had nothing to do with the, quote, neo-Nazis in Orlando that were out there in their cosplay outfits. He had nothing to do with it. But you see, to distract from Whoopi, they go after him. So A-plus answer, Ron DeSantis. Well done. Well done. That is exactly how you want to handle that. No doubt about it. Exactly how you want to handle that. That is how you do it right there. Professional grade. Hit back, smack them back. Don't play their game. And hit back on how terrible things are and why they're trying to distract from it. It's exactly right. He also does get into immigration and some stuff. Maybe I'll touch on that for you tomorrow a little bit, but it's excellent. Excellent to think about the fact that he's going to push back and punch back. Good. I'm tired of them setting the agenda. I'm tired of them setting the narrative. I think you are as well. And that answer was exactly right. The only person anybody should be talking about today when it comes to anti-Semitism is Whoopi Goldberg, who, if she wasn't a good leftist in good standing, would be out of a job today. You know it as well as I do. No doubt. Hey, have a great rest of your day today. Tomorrow, programming note, I'll be filling in for the great one, Mark Levin. So there will not be a podcast tomorrow because I'll be getting ready for Mark Levin's show. And I'll have to save all my brilliance for his national radio show. But that's okay because that means we get 7 hours on the radio together tomorrow. More than enough, if you ask me. Have a great day. Thanks so much.